Chapter 4, Opening Night. It was the morning of February 1st, 1900. After months of planning and teaching the young women lessons on etiquette and grace, tonight the Everleigh Club would be open for business. Victoria was full of butterflies. Perhaps this is one of the reasons the sisters sometimes referred to their young women as the Butterfly Girls. Outside, the Chicago streets were covered with crispy white new winter snow. The brownstone mansions were heated with steam, and every room with a fireplace had a warm, cozy fire lighting the room with a golden glow, much unlike the boarding house where Victoria had resided for the last few years. Tonight, she would pay the price for her new life. Ada and Minna wanted to disassociate from their married name, Lester, and chose to be called Everleigh instead. They chose the name because the sister's grandmother, whom they dearly loved, always signed her letters, Everleigh Yours. In the 1600s, Queen Elizabeth had assigned Sir Walter Raleigh to oversee the colony of Virginia. Legend has it that he gallantly spread his cloak over a puddle to prevent the queen from getting mud on her shoes. Because of this story, Minna and Ada saw lay as meaning aristocracy. Thus the name Everleigh was created. The two adjoining three-story stone mansions at 2131 South Dearborn Street provided 50 rooms and had been renovated and richly furnished. The Everleigh Club had 30 bedrooms, a library, an art gallery, a dining room, and a Turkish ballroom, complete with a huge fountain and parquet floor. The sisters created 12 opulent parlors, all exquisitely decorated and named with different themes. The parlors were private and soundproof. Minna and Ada spared no expense in constructing a sensuous ambience, with the sole purpose of providing an exotic sexual fantasy for their clients. Three orchestras entertained their guests, and rich oil paintings of nude women displaying their sexuality and feminine curves were hung on the wall. The most famous parlor was the Gold Room, which featured gold-rimmed fish bowls and an exquisite miniature piano made of gold. The elegant rose room smelled like roses. There was also the Japanese throne room, the silver room, the copper room, the blue room, the red room, and the green rooms, the Turkish room, and the mirror room. The Egyptian room had a full-size effigy of Cleopatra. The Moorish room had overstuffed couches and sweeping draperies. The Chinese room was a place where gentlemen could set off tiny firecrackers in a huge brass beaker. Each of the rooms had a solid gold spittoon. Upstairs in the boudoirs, the gentlemen found marble-inlaid brass beds, mirrored ceilings, gold bathtubs, fresh-cut roses, and push buttons to ring for champagne. One room had an automatic perfume spray over the bed. Another room had a silver-white spotlight that focused on a divan. For the gentleman with a fantasy of having several wives, the ambience of a Turkish harem was created with rich furnishings. Minna and Ada had hired all colored help. Colored employees with a southern mistress were a safe bet, a concept Minna had known all along. Mosella, along with the others, knew she belonged to the front of the house. The sisters saw them as members of the family. Although the sisters had done so much to prepare for opening night, there was not much fanfare.
That would be tacky. We will build our reputation through word of mouth. And believe me, they will come.
That day, the girls read, ate well, were educated on current events, and took long naps. It was dark when they began getting ready. The butterflies had baths and spent time fixing themselves to look even more beautiful. The hair went up, rose oil perfume was applied, corsets were tied, and each girl was adorned with a beautiful evening gown. All last-minute details were addressed, and everyone was ready to go to work. The Everleigh butterflies were excited about opening night at the Everleigh Club. They looked stunning in their new gowns, and Victoria Pearl looked especially exquisite. Her hair was pinned up in an elegant sweep, revealing her long, slender neck and perfectly shaped ears. The lavish beaded gown she wore had a heart-shaped neckline, accentuating her luscious ivory skin. Victoria felt and looked like Cinderella going to the ball. For weeks, every afternoon, Minna and Ada Everleigh had taught the girls lessons on etiquette and social graces, as if they were attending a highly respected finishing school for ladies. Most of the women who worked at the Everleigh Club came from simple backgrounds. However, because they were pretty, charming, and intelligent, they qualified as good candidates for the sisters to work with. In some cases, it was a major task to transform a woman who had been brought up with much lower standards into a lady with high esteem. The girls learned that the scent of roses was the scent of the elite. They studied the ways of the geishas and the infamous courtesans of Venice. Ada assured the girls,
"We will be known for having the finest, most elegant ladies in Chicago, and in fact, all of America."
Opium was a common drug used by the women on the levee. The sisters knew discipline was important, and they had excessively strict rules. The women all knew there were other pretty girls waiting to take their place. Their actions must be impeccable, and drugs would absolutely not be tolerated. So many thoughts were running through Victoria's mind. She remembered the night with Ian when he stole her virginity. She thought about those Sunday afternoons when she had seen her mother give her father the look and then announce they were going to take a nap before dinner. Molly would walk to his chair and smile as she reached for his hand. Victoria's father would stand up, put his arm around Molly, and together they would walk into their room and close the door. Minna and Ada were well aware that their beautiful butterflies were not girls bred in high society. In fact, quite the opposite. Most of them had come from low-income families or some kind of abuse. Some had no family at all. Minna and Ada had their work cut out for them, trying to convince their clients that these women were well-bred ladies. Minna Everleigh gave her final instructions to the women assembled before her.
"Be polite and forget what you are here for. Remember, gentlemen are only gentlemen when properly introduced. We shall see that each girl is formally presented to each of our guests. No lining up for selection, as in other houses. There shall be no cry, 'In the parlor, girls!' when visitors arrive. Be patient is all I ask. Remember, the Everleigh Club has no time for the rough element, the clerk on a holiday, or a man without a checkbook. It is going to be difficult at first. I know. It means, briefly, that your language will have to be ladylike and that you will forego the entreaties you have used in the past. You have the whole night before you, and a $50 client is more desirable than five $10 ones. Less wear and tear. You will thank me for this advice in later years. Your youth and beauty are all you have. Preserve it. Stay respectable by all means. We know men better than you do. Do not rush them or roll them. We will permit no monkey shines, no knockout drops, no robberies, and no crimes of any description. We will supply the clients. You amuse them in a way they have never been amused before. Give, but give interestingly and with mystery. I want you girls to be proud that you are a butterfly in the Everlay Club. That is all. Now spruce up and look your best.
What do we do if a man wants to have intercourse? Victoria's question was so innocent, it made the sisters and the other girls smile.
My dear, you simply use the phrase that has worked for thousands of years. I beg your pardon, sir, but I'm afraid I do not know you well enough quite yet.
Minna's comment put Victoria quickly at ease. The other girls thought it was hysterical. Maddie was laughing as she put her arms out and then hugged Victoria. Victoria Pearl had chosen her station to be close to the piano. She loved music. Her mother had taught her to play. Many times she would play the exquisite gold piano at the Everlay Club late in the evening as everyone was getting ready to retire. The music created a peaceful ambience throughout the mansion, and it always took her to a magical world of her own, where she fantasized about what the composers were feeling and attempting to communicate when creating each piece. It reminded her of her teenage years when she played for her parents. Molly would crochet Irish lace and Brian would read while they quietly enjoyed listening to their daughter play as her parents sat by a warm fire. The Everlay Club was ready for business. The temperature outside was 8 below zero. There had been no publicity, advertising, or press. There were 2 different groups of musicians playing, and the chef had prepared various foods for elegant dining. At 8 o'clock, the doorbell rang. A group of men stood at the door wanting to come in. It was quite clear by their appearance, they were not the clientele the sisters would allow inside.
I am sorry. I believe you have the wrong house.
A half an hour later, a group of men from the theater showed up at the door. Minna was quite aware that although the theater group could be very entertaining in their own right, they did not make the kind of money that could easily afford what the Everlays had to offer. They were also told that they were mistaken and had the wrong house. The experienced girls had never seen clients actually be turned away before and began expressing their concerns. One of the girls was pouting.
It's opening night. We've been waiting for this for weeks. I feel like a princess, all dressed up for the ball, but there's no ball.
No one is going to want to pay these prices. It is all just a bluff.
We will be out of a job before we even get started.
Victoria stayed quiet. Each time the doorbell to the Everlay Club rang, butterflies would flutter in her stomach. She was not sure if it was fear or excitement. It even slightly took her breath away. Minna decided to pick up the paper. The headlines read, "Rights for Philip Danforth Armour Jr. will be held at 3700 Michigan Avenue. The Armours owned a meatpacking company, which was a huge enterprise in Chicago, and Michigan Avenue was in the elite neighborhood. They were among one of the wealthiest families in Chicago. One of the girls walked over and slyly looked over Minna's shoulder to see what she was reading. She quickly ran back to the other girls.
We have her all wrong. Minna knows the swells all right. I caught her reading about Armour Jr.'s funeral, and she acted as if she'd known him.
10 minutes later, Mosella came to Minna and reported the backstairs conversation.
The girls are talking as if you are friends with the Armour family. You are a clever one, Miss Minna.
Oh, it worked, Mosella. I have never heard of Armour until today. Do not tell anyone I told you.
Finally, there was another knock at the door. When Minna Everlay opened it, to her delight, she saw several Texas cattlemen standing there with hats in hand.
Welcome to the Everleigh House, gentlemen. The ladies are anxious to make your acquaintance.